Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Good morning to you, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in today. We're going to talk with Zach Renstrom on the program this morning. Hi, Zach. You doing all right?
Yeah.
Wearing lavender.
I guess.
Looking good. Yeah.
I don't even know what I wear. I just kind of pull it out.
Well, you're looking sharp today.
Thanks.
Looking sharp today. Now, we're going to talk some water stuff. In fact, our buddy Stockton over there sent me a couple of questions about water stuff. But I wanted to get your take on this whole field hearing thing on Monday night. What was the gist? You actually testified, right, in front of members of Congress?
Correct. Three members, yes.
Tell us, what was the gist, first of all, of your testimony, and then what was the gist of the whole meeting? We kind of know, but if you could maybe break it down a little bit for us.
Yeah, the main gist, and this is what we all testified, is that interaction between local government and federal agencies and how that works. And unfortunately, it's very negative at this time.
It's not a good relationship at the moment.
It's not a good relationship. Now, I will say the individuals that we work with, like in the St. George office and everything like that, most of them are good individuals. A lot of them are trying to do their jobs, but the sheer overwhelming bureaucracy of those agencies is just so crushing. And so even if you have a local individual that they look at a project, say this is a straightforward project, it should be easy to do, will still take years and years and years to do. And so, and it's just because they can't do anything without sending up the chain and having 25 people look at it and just all the things. And then also one of the things that we face a lot here as we're working with one individual and commitments are made, then that individual moves or something happens and a new individual comes in and say, well, no, we're going to blow that up.
We're not going to honor it.
Yeah. And so it's a big problem. I mean, and the results, I know a lot of your listeners are saying, well, I don't care. Well, the thing is, it's costing the county millions of dollars, millions and millions of dollars. And so your local tax dollars are going to pay to deal with this massive bureaucracy.
So what about the bottom line as far as the Northern Corridor? There's a lawsuit there. It's caught up in, you know, red tape and lawsuits and stuff. Is it going to happen? If it is it down the road sometime? Is it a dead project? I mean, you know, from listening to Adam Snow, and I like Adam a lot. I think he's a very smart guy. He said, you know, we did a land exchange. We thought everybody would be happy with this land exchange, and instead they're still not happy. What do you know? I mean, is this thing dead in the water? What's going on?
You know, that's the Northern Corridor is a perfect example of things that have been changed. And so in 2009, the county, working with multiple groups, including several environmental groups, agreed to create a national conservation area. And that was a bill that was going to Congress. And the county at that time says, we will agree to several things. First of all, designating a national conservation area, creating thousands of acres of wilderness area, designating multiple rivers as wild and scenic rivers. In exchange, we want a couple of things. And one of the things is we need a route through the Northern Corridor. And so in the bill, it talks about, says, well, the BLM shall prepare a travel management plan. And in that travel plan, there should be one or multiple alternatives in the Northern Corridor in this area, meaning, yeah, we understand you might have to have some flexibility to avoid certain geological formations or some, but BLM, yeah, that was part of the package deal.
Okay.
So they came, so the county proceeded with that, moving forward, and then the BLM came and says, yeah, we can't do that. We're not going to live up to the deal. Even though you agreed to all this.
They reneged.
Yeah. So the county came back, and this is when I was in the county, says, okay, we'll make you a deal. We understand there's certain things going on, but there's this area of the county that is heavily recreated on, that has a lot of people enjoying that area. And we went out and did a count, and we found out that this area, where before it didn't have a lot of tortoises, it has a lot of tortoises. So we'll do another exchange. We'll come to the negotiating table. So we're going to add about 6,000 acres.
That's a lot into
conservation area if you give us the Northern Corridor. And so that,
which is way, 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 way less acres.
Yeah, I think I want to say like 160 acres will be disturbed.
Yeah, roughly one About one to ten, a lot.
And there's not going to be any development along, because a lot of people say, well, if you build that road, there'll be a bunch of homes.
So gas stations and houses, and no.
It's just literally getting from people from point A to point B. The other question came up then is like, well, these tortoises, they need to interact. They need to get from point A to point B because they, if you need the population spreading around and breeding, so the DNA kind of gets mixed up.
There's a migratory pattern for tortoises?
Well, not they don't migrate, but they do move to go find other tortoises to have babies with.
Okay.
And so we don't want to impede that because we want that mixing. So the county came and did a study that showed that if you put these culverts underneath the road, these tortoises will go right through these culverts.
Oh.
So the county says even in these other areas that we're not going to do anything with, we're going to add culverts to make sure we get more interaction. And so
A turtle tunnel,
yeah. So they came and they did a bunch of stuff like this. At that time, the federal agency said, yeah, this is a good exchange. We have a mandate. This is we get the Northern Corridor. They should get the Northern Corridor. The county is adding a ton of area. Now, the area, we call it Zone 6. The area was heavily recreated on, like I said before, a lot of mountain biking, camping, rock climbing. And that was one agreement the county said is we want to keep people, the ability for people to go and rock climb in this area. People, I mean, like Moe's Valley is in this area.
Okay.
Mountain biking and all that. And they thought it was a really good deal. It went through, got a record decision, and that's what the environmental groups have sued on. And that went through the court system, and it's kind of imploding all again. And so now the BLM's coming back saying, well, we're going to tweak this again, and we're going to take out the Northern Corridor. And so that's the frustrating part. And your taxpayer dollars, your county taxpayer dollars has spent a lot of money on this trying to appease the federal agencies.
Now the word I'm hearing is that a lot of people opposing the Northern Corridor are people that live in Green Valley. People that are not, is it Green Valley? Green Springs.
Green Springs. Yep.
Sorry. I always get those two mixed up. But I know the difference. Anyway, because that would pass basically kind of right through where, you know, at least it would start right where they live. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that road, the Northern Corridor, has been planned for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's not going to run like in anybody's backyard. It's not like they build a house now and there's going to be this road right behind their house. It kind of goes out. And that was one of the things that the county proposed. The original proposal we had, it wouldn't go be this Northern Corridor, wouldn't go behind anybody's homes that has a home there existing. So the infrastructure all has been built for the Northern Corridor. So if you go up into Green Springs, there's an existing road with medians and everything ready for that Northern Corridor, because we've been told for 20 plus years that the BLM is going to give them access to build that Northern Corridor. And so the people that kind of moved there, you know, that road's been planned for before their homes were built.
They probably should have known about it.
It's been on the master plan for a long, long time.
So again, long story short, is the Northern Corridor ever going to happen? I mean, you can't predict the future.
Yeah, I can't predict.
In your opinion, do you think it'll ever happen?
I think on this case, specifically, since Congress specifically directed the BLM to provide a Northern Corridor alternative route, I think there is a very strong argument for that. And I think that the fact that the county came to the table with such massive mitigation, I think this is if there was one to win, this would be one to win, because it's pretty straightforward.
But you said if. I don't like that word.
Yeah. Now, I will say I'm not, once I left the county, I have not been involved in a lot of those meetings.
Yeah.
Because I have other things to worry about.
Yes, you do.
So I don't know all the ins and outs and all the proceedings and everything that's going on right now and all the negotiations.
Well, so at this point, what do? We just keep our fingers crossed, and I guess legal minds are working on it and everything. And will you tell people, maybe those that don't know or maybe new to the area or not familiar, what the Northern Corridor is? It would start, what, by exit 13 through there? And
yeah, basically it would be exit 13, and it'd go up through those developments, and then it would go, and I always used to call it the Turtle Road.
Turtle Road, that's what we call it.
Yeah. Red Hills Drive, and it would tie into that.
Yeah.
And so it'd allow people that are coming to Ivins and Santa Clara or Diamond Valley, Dameron Valley, it'd be a way for them to actually get to that area and not have to go through like downtown St. George.
So instead of having to get off exit 8, drive up the boulevard, get to Bluff Street and get out that way, they could actually skip all that.
Yes. Yeah, it just kind of allowed them to bypass that or vice versa. So if somebody was like in Ivins or Santa Clara in that area of St. George, and they needed to go, let's say, to Costco, that would probably be the easiest way to get to Costco is along that road.
It almost seems too logical for the federal government to like it. Because it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the aspect of there was an agreement made that we're creating a national conservation area. Congress came in and elected all that, and we need to be cautious of all that. But there's ways we can do it. Like, no tortoises will be, like, the tortoises won't even care.
They don't care.
No. I mean, there will be some habitat that's destroyed, but yeah, they're picking up another 6,000 over here that is going to be protected that was not protected before.
Hmm. When I first moved to Southern Utah, I lived in Cedar City for 9 months, and their big thing there were, and I don't know if it still is, but it was prairie dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess at some point the prairie dogs were a protected species, and if you wanted to build a house, if you wanted to build anything, you had to worry about the prairie dogs. You had to have a study done, and I know Zach is a big fan of NEPA and the environmental studies and all that, so that's your favorite thing, right?
Well, the thing is the concept of it, I agree with 100%.
Yeah.
Where before you do a project, you go out there and you're like, okay, we're going to look at several alternatives here.
Yeah.
Okay. And which one is the one that makes the most sense? Which one can we do that causes the least amount of environmental issues? I agree with 100%. I think it's actually good engineering practice to do that, to look at all the alternatives and kind of look at the effects of them. And then say, yeah, this is what we need to do. I have no problem with that concept. The problem I have with is it's not that anymore.
Yeah.
You're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars, and you're not getting a lot of times any environmental benefit out of it. And the bureaucracy, you know, sure, have a biologist look at it, but you don't need 10 biologists and then a political appointee reading the same thing about tortoises. That's where I get frustrated with.
Yeah, yeah, understandable. There was a show that was pretty popular called The Goldbergs. I don't know if you ever watched
that. Oh, yeah.
It was kind of an 80s period piece show. And the dad on The Goldbergs, who somebody said that he and I actually look a lot alike. I don't agree with that. But anyway, he always used to tell his kids, don't be a moron.
Yeah.
But one of the episodes, they finally kind of, I don't remember how the situation, but they kind of cornered him and said, why do you say that? And he said, I'm not trying to be mean to my kids. I'm not calling them a moron. I'm telling them, don't be a moron. Don't do stupid stuff. You know, use your brain. Be logical. And sometimes I look at some of these things and I'm like, why is the government being a moron on this type of thing? Just let's be logical. I agree with you. I mean, it's good to take a look at all the alternatives and find out the best way to act. But then find it and do it.
Yep.
You know, and don't let it sit in the courts and whatever for months and months and have, you know, 60,000 page reports and stuff that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Frustrating.
Yeah. So Stockton sent me a text, an email, and he said, hey, will you ask Zach about the Panguitch Dam? And I'm like, when he first asked, I was like, well, that's in Panguitch. That's not even in our county. But he said more specifically, what if we had a situation like the Panguitch Dam happen in Washington County? How would you deal with it? I mean, to recap the Panguitch Dam, they had a little bit of a breach. It wasn't a whole dam break, but there was, I guess, some leakage and some water. You know, my first thought was when they were talking about this, I'm like, and the entirety of my experience is building sandcastles right on the beach. But once you have a leak, it's almost impossible to actually really save the entire dam. But the folks that manage that say it is actually safe now. But what would happen? You know, maybe just apply it to some of the dams we have in Washington County, Zach.
No, it's a big. I mean, hey, dams are big structures, and if they fail, they can cause a lot of damage and you know, even take lives. And so we take it very, very seriously. The state of Utah also takes it very, very seriously. So we also rank our dams. So some dams, if they breach, you know, you probably wouldn't cause any damage. But the ones that, if they did breach and cause that type of damage, they're called high risk. And so we have multiple high risk ones. And so we work very closely with the state of Utah, the dam safety, And every year we sit down and we talk about our management plan, how we're responding to that. Mm-hmm. When there's certain amount of water in that, we up our inspections of those and make sure we're constantly looking at them. And so it's one of those things that you can't just build a dam and then just forget about it and leave it. It's right. One of those things that you always have to be constantly monitoring and looking at it. And even like Kolob that sits way up on top of the mountains, we fly people up there in helicopters in the middle of the winter where they can go down and make sure that that dam is doing the things that we need it to do and make sure it's safe. And so it's just one of those things you just always have to think about and constantly be very vigilant on it and make sure that you don't even get into that area where there's even a chance of it breaching. So
the thing to remember, my dad's a geologist and he'll tell you the remarkable things that water can do. Mm-hmm. People underestimate, but all you have to do is think about the Grand Canyon. How was the Grand Canyon formed?
Yeah.
Water.
Yeah.
You know? And so over time, and we're talking obviously a very short period of time when it comes to a dam and a lake and things like that compared to a geologic era, but still, water has a way of figuring out a way to, I mean, it's always seeking the lowest point, right? And mm-hmm. sometimes it'll cut its way there one way or another. So, okay, so inspections on that. What are the three biggest dams in Washington County, Zach?
The three largest?
Three largest. The three ones that we would worry about, maybe.
Gunlock, Sand Hollow, and Quail.
Okay. And if one of these were to...
Don't say that.
If something bad... Well, Quail Lake broke back in 1989, so if...
We actually do have a plan for if something happens.
Okay. And that plan would entail...
So even if there's even a hiccup, like if there's even a concern, then we immediately respond to that. We have state people respond to it. We just respond. So the question is what's going on with the dam? So when we monitor these dams, we're constantly looking for any type of change. Is anything tweaking here? Is the piezometers changing? And so we're just kind of monitoring the dam. And so if all of a sudden we see a change in anything, we get the experts together and say, okay, why did this change? Like, what is going on here? And we quickly dive down to that. So your question, though, is what happens if we get to the point they're like, this sucker's going to breach? So we immediately contact the emergency. The county has emergency response, and we immediately contact them. And that would just trigger. Now, they have that entity set up for any type of emergency in the county if there was an earthquake. We immediately contacted them, and they would instantly, like, send out the trigger. And that would just... we have plans that show if a dam breached, this would be the floodway that would go through. Right. And they would immediately go into action, getting people out of those areas, making sure, like pulling people out of those areas to make sure they're safe. The first thing we do is make sure we're protecting lives. We pull everybody out. And then after they breach, you just kind of sit back and let the water recede, and then you go in and start repairing.
So I didn't live here yet in 89 when it happened, the Quail Creek thing happened. You weren't here yet, but I don't recall that there was loss of life for that dam breach. Is that true? Nobody died?
No one died. Some cattle died and some goats.
Okay, and there was obviously houses and apartments were flooded.
So at that time, it was just a different dynamic. A lot of people hadn't built by the river at that time, and so when it did go through, there was some damage and stuff like that, but... people weren't living that close to the river. And so at that time, there wasn't as much damage they could. I mean, it blew out bridges.
Yeah.
It, like I said,
oh, wow.
Livestock got killed and a few things like that. But a big part of that is if a dam ruptures, let's say Gunlock ruptures, that water isn't instantly in Santa Clara. And the same thing with Quail. When Quail went, it wasn't instantly in St. George. And so they were able to radio and say, okay, they police officers, get those people out of there as fast as you can.
Yeah.
And they were able to close roads. They were able to get people out of the path that the water came down. But and I'm going to have nightmares tonight because...
I'm sorry.
We do think about this. And we do constantly... Because if you don't think about it and you don't plan for it, then that's when bad things happen. And so we do put a lot of time and effort in it where we go through and analyze and spend time on each dam thinking about it and talking about it and making sure it's safe.
Now, you said twice. At that time, people weren't building by the river or down in the riverbed.
Yeah.
By saying at that time, you would imply that at this time, now, people are doing that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I spoke about this. And some of the places that people are building homes and businesses right now, I think, is a moronic move.
Yeah, don't be a moron.
Don't be a moron. Some of these things, this is the engineer in me talking. I'm thinking, oh, and sometimes it's not even water levels. We have massive erosion, and so when we have a big flood event, if you think of like the Santa Clara River in 2005 and when we had flooding out there, most of the homes that were destroyed were not destroyed by flooding. The banks just eroded away, and then the house slid into the river.
Yeah.
And so erosion is a big deal here with our really salty, soft sands. Our very salt, sandy sands.
Sandy ground.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. So if, and heaven forbid it ever happened, but if any of these big dams actually do fail, do you think there would be loss of life? Do you think it would actually, I mean, you know, obviously I'm asking you to speculate, but. Yeah. Things are definitely different than they were in 1989. I mean, that was, believe it or not, that was 35 years ago.
So if we got to the point where we thought a dam was going to rupture and we sent notices out, I think our law enforcement and just not law enforcement, we're talking firefighters, we're talking about every type of emergency response person you could ever imagine. I think that they would do a really good job getting people out of that harm's path area. To make sure we wouldn't lose life.
Including some homes and businesses that are built in places that would get flooded pretty badly.
There's no question about there would be damage to businesses and homes.
Mm.
So.
All right. Well, hopefully, and I know you're working hard to make sure that it never does happen.
Yeah.
We don't think it will. We can't make a promise, right?
Well, that's one of the things that I believe in is if you ignore something or you forget about something, that's when it's a problem. But we actually do think about these things and we do analyze these things and spend a lot of time on them to make sure it doesn't happen. So
in our personal lives, maybe we can ignore something and hope it goes away. But in something when it comes to like dams and professional settings, they don't usually just go away by themselves. So you got to monitor them. You got to keep an eye on them.
Like, my daughter came in and said, "Hey, Dad, for the last 2 months, there's this light on my dashboard."
Check engine light. Oh, it'll go away.
And I just like, Sierra. And she's a wonderful daughter. But I was like, Sierra, if you see that thing go on, you immediately contact me. And she's like, okay. And fortunately, it was something very simple. But with these dams, we never even let the light check engine come on. Like,
that's good.
We're constantly monitoring them.
Yeah, good point. All right, we're going to check weather. Talking with Zach Renstrom today from the Washington County Water Conservancy District and a congressional witness. We'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. I'm Andy, 934 on KDXU. Thank you for tuning in this morning. Had a lively discussion yesterday about scooters that go too fast and e-bikes and who should wear a helmet and what helmets they should be wearing and stuff. And Zach, are you a biker scooter guy? Do you get on those things?
You know, I used to ride my bike a lot. Yeah. I'd ride it to work and everything. Uh-huh. Just for the exercise, and then I had a couple of very close calls with some cars.
Ah, yeah.
And I just thought, you know, I'm going to die on this thing, and my wife's going to get a large insurance policy, and she's going to marry somebody like 15 years younger than me.
Yeah,
and
some tall guy. Huh?
Some tall, handsome guy, and I thought, nope, she's stuck with me. So I unfortunately stopped biking because of that reason.
Okay. Well, you know, we had the scooter accident over the weekend where some kids on scooters actually hit a car, but the car had turned in front of them, but they were going really fast. And unfortunately, the kids were hurt pretty seriously, had to be life flighted. I don't have an update on their injuries, but I will tell you that it was a lot of people in town are concerned about this because you see, you know, we have the ones you can rent, the spin or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
They have a restrictor on them. They won't go faster than 15 miles an hour. But if you buy your kid an electric bike or you have an electric scooter for your kid, they go really fast. Mm-hmm. You know, you get going downhill, and with the electric motor boost, I mean, we're talking 50-plus miles an hour.
I didn't know they would go that fast.
And imagine you got a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old on a scooter going, you know, 50 miles an hour or faster. maybe wearing a helmet, and if it is, it's a bike helmet, which isn't rated for those speeds. Maybe not wearing a helmet, probably not wearing a helmet, and it becomes a real thing. Now, you have kids at home.
Yeah.
Would you put your kid on a bicycle, an e-bike, or an e-scooter that goes that fast?
See, my wife, I'm kind of the carefree parent, where my wife's the more strict one. And so whatever I say,
your wife is the realistic one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bad stuff happens.
So my son did have an electric scooter, but it did not go 50 miles per hour. So that would concern even me as a carefree parent.
Mm-hmm.
That would make me a little bit nervous.
We also talked a lot about, the police department was on yesterday, about the rules and laws that they have to obey. And they actually, like at a stop sign, they don't have to stop. It is written in the law that a stop is more like a yield sign. If it's clear, if you slow down, you are required to slow down. But if it's clear, there's no pedestrians, you're allowed to keep going through the stop sign when you're riding one of those. So one of the many rules that are going to be amended and changed in the next little while.
I did not know things. That.
Yeah.
Because part of my job is I travel. And when I'm like in Washington, D.C., I'll actually rent one of those little scooters instead of getting a cab, because I can get there faster.
That's true.
And it's cheaper.
Yeah.
And they're funner. So
it's cheaper, really.
Oh, yeah, like you can get one of those little scooters for like $12, but to get a taxi ride, it's like $25. So I'll just jump on a scooter and...
All right, well, it's supposed to rain this weekend. I know when it rains, Zach feels pretty good, right, most of the time. Like, all right, more rain, that's good. As long as it's not too much rain.
Right.
An update on the snowpack and water soil saturation, Zach? Yep.
So right now we're still doing really, really well. Most of the snow has come off Pine Valley Mountain. I mean, there's still those shady areas that has snow.
Mm-hmm.
But Pine Valley and Enterprise area, those snowpacks are, for the most part, pretty much gone. Above Zions National Park, we still have snow. It is melting up by Kolob, and it's coming off. But right now it's coming off very nicely. We're capturing what we can.
We got real hot real fast, though. Did that affect things?
Yeah. I mean, it speed up the runoff, but it's not so much the heat that gets us on flooding. It really is when we have a snowpack and then that warm rain event.
Warm rain.
Mm. And so, like, right now, a lot of the lower elevation snow is all gone, and so we still have that higher up on, like, Kolob snow. So I think this rain coming in, it looks like a warmer rain, so I'm sure that'll melt some of the snow, but I don't predict any flooding to occur.
Thank goodness. That's good. It has come up a couple of different times in the last week or so for me, people talking about replacing their grass with turf has been, artificial turf, but also desert friendly grass, and of course the rebate is still in effect, right?
But I
think it's important, we need to tell people, you don't just do it and then say, look, I did it.
Right.
This is a process. You've got to have someone from your department, right, come in and say, okay, let's get a before, and then we can do an after, and kind of tell them what they need to do, right?
Yeah, and it's fairly easy. They just go to the website, fill out some information. Within a couple of days, someone will email them saying we need to come out. And so we send one of our employees out with the homeowner, and they'll say, well, we're ripping out this area. We measure it. And then we say, when you're complete, let us know. And then when they say, hey, the project's done, we'll go back out and look at it. So, and part of the reason is they just can't rip out grass and, let's say, pour concrete. They have to, it's more a landscape. Yeah, we want a landscape conversion. We want desert-friendly plants and desert-friendly trees. And so we just go out and make sure it's done appropriately. And then if it all looks good, it's fairly simple. A lot of people that we talked to that have gone through the process said it was very, very smooth. If it all looks good, then we give them the rebate, and it's been very positive, and people really seem to be embracing it. And we try to make it as easy as we can. There are, the state helped fund a portion of their grass rebate, and so the state comes with a lot of conditions and requirements, and we've tried to take those and make them as smooth as possible.
Okay. What is, how much could I make? Say, I mean, there's a cap on the most you can make, right? Is there a minimum? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, so what we do is the state has a cap on how much money they will put into it for one entity. What we do is if they reach that cap, we will actually still continue to work with them. And so let's say there's a homeowner association that just has a ton of grass and they want to do things. We'll say, well, let's max out the portion that we can work with on the state. But even on that, we'll continue to work with them to say, okay, maybe there's these different options we can do. And so we'll continue the rebate above the state caps.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, because they're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to do things. And so when they get to that level, we actually have, his name's Doug. Doug will actually work with them independently, and he'll go
out
there.
Doug.
Yeah, good old Doug.
We love Doug.
Yeah. We love Doug. He's a great guy.
By the way, Doug was the name of the dog in the movie Up.
Oh, was?
Yeah.
Oh.
The only reason I know that is because I watched it last night with my wife. It's actually a really good movie. But
it is a good movie.
Yeah.
It's good meaning, so.
Way to go, Doug. What about the artificial turf option? If I'm doing part of it, artificial turf, is that okay? Because I've heard people compare, you know, if you put artificial turf in, it's just like putting concrete in. It's pretty close to the same thing. Is that accurate?
I mean, so not all artificial turf is the same.
That's
mean,
true.
There's some really cheap stuff, and there's some really, really nice stuff. But we do allow for artificial grass. If you're taking out existing grass and replacing that with artificial grass, we will allow that for the grass rebate.
Okay.
So
depending on size, right? I mean,
there's limits, yeah, and stuff like that. So you could do that. So what we've noticed, a lot of people rip out a big portion of their grass and then just install like a small little area of artificial grass and then convert the rest of it to to desert-friendly landscaping.
Okay. What are some, just the average layperson, desert-friendly plant? I keep hearing that desert-friendly, you know, landscape. What does that mean? Are there a few plants I would recognize that I would want in my yard?
Oh, yeah. You see them all over town all the time. Honestly, the best thing that people can do is we have that Desert Gardens up on top of the hill by the Sugarloaf or the Dixie Rock. Mm-hmm. And we have a whole garden there. And all those plants any of those plants up there would count. And it's really easy. They can go around, and so there'll be a tree, and at the bottom of the tree is like a little metal plaque that tells you the name of the tree, and you can actually scan that and pull it up and actually learn more about that. And there's hundreds of different plants that you can put in there. And so it really is just like, what are you trying to go with? Are you trying to, if you're looking for shade, then we have some really good shade trees, and you can go up there and see how much shade they produce. If you're going for more like cactus look, you have that. Or if you want to go with the native look, you can go up there and we have a whole section that's just like, these are native plants. And even some of our native plants, if you just give them a little bit of water, just drip irrigation, they'll really actually, you know, have a lot of leaf cover and actually grow really, really well. And so that's what I encourage. Instead of just trying to name one or two, I just encourage people to go up there and walk around. And it's a really popular area. People enjoy going up there, and it's nice.
Really nice around Christmas time, too, with the lights. And I know we're a long ways from that. I got a question here. A text. Can an older HOA stop you from taking out your lawn? That's been a source of, I don't know, controversy, right?
The legislature just came in and changed the law on that issue and said they can't. Now, with that, there's some caveats.
Okay.
Because if the HOA owns the land, and each HOA is different on how they, is it common area, is it limited common area, there's a lot of things like that, and we'll look at it. But in general, if it is your land, right, well, I believe it's June 1st, the law will go in effect. They can't stop you.
So if I buy the property, even though the HOA has specific rules about grass and all this, if I own the property, I can still do the change.
Starting in like August, after the law changed. So the legislature came in and tweaked the law in this area, and that was one of the areas that they came in and tweaked and says, listen, we need to allow people to have this thing. Now, they can still have, the HOA can have requirements saying we still want, like, desert-friendly, and they can still put a lot of requirements on it.
Right.
That's what we do. So when this comes up, what we really try to do is we try to work with the homeowner associations and say, listen, And Doug's our guy, once again. We'll say, well...
All right, Doug.
Yeah. He's over that department.
We love Doug. Doug's great. Yeah.
We do. We'll try to help them and say, hey, let us educate you. What are you concerned with? And a lot of times they're like, well, we just don't want gravel. We think just straight gravel is ugly. And we say, okay, well, let's work with you and show you some options and things you can do and come up with a compromise saying, yeah, they can rip out the turf, but then they have to replace it with this. And we've had a lot of really good luck with that, just working with people, making sure that they can see the vision.
Okay. Yeah. Good idea. All right, another text. Let's see. Where is that place to see the desert-friendly plants and trees? And I can answer that one. I'll let you maybe chime in, too. Just right up on Red Hills Parkway.
Yep.
By the Dixie Rock.
Uh-huh.
North of the Dixie Rock?
Or? It's actually east.
It's east of the... Yeah. And someone's from my direction.
But and sometimes people call it the Pioneer Park up on the hill. And, yeah, they just go up there and literally, if you're in downtown St. George and you look north and you see a rock that says Dixie, just go up to that
right
and see it.
Right next to that, yeah.
Yeah, and to me, it's amazing. Like, it'll be 105 degrees, and I will actually go out, because I spend a lot of time on my cell phone, I'll actually go out in the park when it's that hot, and it's with all the shade trees and everything, it's not that bad. So
not that far from your office, right?
No, yeah. We just have a swinging gate.
Yeah.
So, okay. And that way I can get out there. And the other thing that's nice about it is... if you want to learn about like our endangered fish, we have a fish pond there that shows the endangered fish and kind of has plaques that talk about them and the time and effort that the district spends keeping all those fish happy. And so they can go up there and not just learn about bridges or about plants. They can go up there and learn about the fish. And here's something interesting, though, is the number of people that get engaged up there is actually quite remarkable. That and the water tank. In fact, last week there was a couple that got engaged on that water tank. So,
okay. That doesn't seem very romantic to me, but...
I should say this. I looked out the window, and there's some guy kneeling down on one leg looking up at a girl. And she reached down and gave him a big hug. So I'm assuming it was an engagement.
He probably kneeled down and said, honey, will you go to Golden Corral with me?
Maybe.
I don't know.
She was pretty excited about Golden Corral.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get an update on the Chief Toker Reservoir and that Warner Valley Reservoir that's going to be coming really soon. Or not. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
All right, welcome back. We're not going to go specific numbers because Carrie's the one with all the specific numbers, but... we were just having a discussion about how Washington County is really doing a good job, especially in relation to the rest of the state, as far as, making sure we know that we're a dry place.
Yeah, so with the grass rebate, our numbers are better than the rest of the states. In fact, the state of Utah came down here, and several water districts from up north came down and says, what are you doing in Washington County? Because you guys seem to have it together. And a lot of it is just, I have this amazing staff that, I talked about the state requirements.
Well, there's Doug. Yeah.
There's Doug. Yeah. And Doug was part of it. Yeah. And Carrie.
And Carrie. Yeah. Doug and Carrie.
And the state's like, here's all these requirements.
Wait a minute. That's Doug and Carrie. That's the King of Queens, the main character.
I've never
King
thought of,
Queens,
of that. Yeah. That's a good show, too.
Yeah, I know. I like it.
I don't know if Doug's wife, Elizabeth, will.
Probably not.
Yeah.
No. Probably not. But we are doing a good job.
And like
better
I said,
than the rest of the state.
Part of it is, like, the state comes with all these requirements, and we take care of 80% of those requirements automatically. Like, so the person doesn't even have to go through all that and download stuff. We just streamlined it, and they don't even know what happens. And so part of it, we just make it easy.
And the Carrie was saying that some of the rebates are $3,000.
Well, the average is over $3,000.
That's the average.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Some of
that
them,
ain't chump change.
No.
Yeah.
It really does help pay for it and really help people make that change.
It's not. And Zach said this a few months ago. It's not going to pay you for your whole project.
But
it'll put a pretty big dent.
In talking to people, if they do all the work themselves, it should pay for all the materials.
Okay. Labor, you're on your own.
Yeah. And so if they want to go out, the thing with landscaping, it's kind of like carpet. You can go with the cheapest or like the really high end, and there's a big price swing right there. And so it kind of comes back to what they decide to do.
Okay. But we're doing a good job. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, a couple of things you mentioned, the fact that you've made it easier is big. And I think your public relations push about it helped a lot too.
Yeah, that campaign "Get off your lazy grass" was very popular. And then
ain't nobody got time for that.
And then the other thing is # take your Saturdays back has been really a popular thing too, because it makes people think about like, Saturday morning, I don't want to spend all day mowing
and weeding and trimming and bagging and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yep. They'd rather go to the lake and play.
Although I have to say, during my lifetime, my very first job, first time I ever made money in my life, I was like 12 years old and I was mowing lawns and it became part of, a little lawn therapy, mowing the lawn a little bit. So I'm not against that completely, but.
Well, you can still have lawn.
Yeah.
Do you want to come mow my lawn?
No.
I have it I think it's like 10 square feet.
Well, my wife kind of ruined it. First of all, I had back surgery, so I don't really mow anymore. And second of all, she bought an electric mower. And it just isn't the same if you don't have I don't know. It's just not the same. So, updates on Chief Toker Reservoir. Where are we at?
So, Chief Toker, we got the foundation is pretty much done. And we had to move a bunch of soil. And so people drive by and they see a lot of dirt being moved and stuff like that. But the foundation being close to being completed is a huge step. And so we're about ready to send out the second bid where that's the actual dam that most people see that comes above the ground.
Yeah.
And so we're in the last part of the review for that. And so that'll go out for bid here pretty soon. Mm. That'll be years and a lot of earth moving activity. And so we're looking really close to getting that. The pipeline to bring the water into that, the vast majority of that's completed now. And so that's we're ready to turn on the pipes as soon as the dam's ready.
I saw at the fair, Tokerville, they had kind of a mock-up of where the lake was going to be, the Chief Toker Lake or Reservoir. It was fascinating. One thing I was thinking, though, when I saw that, I was like, so were there any houses down in that area? Did anybody have to be displaced in order for, and they didn't?
No, yeah, it was all the land is owned, well, I shouldn't say all the land. The majority of the land was owned by the BLM. From that aspect, it was pretty easy to get. We had to work with a couple of private private owners, and we, just work with them and pay them for that land. It's going to be an amazing little lake out there. And the city already has really exciting plans to turn it into like a really nice feature where people can go and walk around it and enjoy it, put paddle boats out there that they can kind of play in the water. And so I think it's just going to be a great amenity for the city, and the city's embraced it and they're planning for it now. So I think it'll just be really just a fun place to visit, especially in the summer when it's hot.
They're bypassing the downtown Tokerville and where it used to be, you would, in order to get from, say Hurricane out to the freeway, you had to go right through the heart of Tokerville. That's not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah.
Is that road finished yet? Have they done that yet?
They're getting closer. They've had to do a ton of work on it. But yeah, that road will go in. And once that road goes in, there's already developers that are planning to go in and build very large developments. And
somebody told me, actually it was one of the developers told me, maybe it was the mayor, said 1,700 rooftops.
Yeah. It's
in that area.
Yeah.
And right now there's 1,700 residents in that area. So it's going to maybe quadruple the size of Tokerville.
Yeah. And so, as the entity that's responsible to make sure they have water, we're putting a lot of pipes in the ground. Like right now, going up through Leeds, we're building pipelines from the water treatment plant. We build that new tank up there. We're building the reservoir to accommodate the growth that's occurring in Tokerville.
Right. Now, I wanted to ask you about the cedar development they're proposing putting in, where the road and everything south of the road is Washington County, and the development is actually in Iron County, but there are some right-of-way things and some water things that you have to worry about. Has that all been resolved, or are we still in flux there?
I have not had an update on that in about a month.
Okay.
We did the current plan that's been proposed. The water district, we have put in a letter saying we oppose the current plan, because we feel it will have a huge detrimental effect on the groundwater in that area. And
that's
right now,
not
they're
good.
Yeah, and we're not against development. We just want to make sure we're protecting our water. And so we're just saying this current plan you're proposing is not acceptable. You need to go back. And I know the residents up there are concerned, of course, about groundwater, but they're also concerned about traffic and everything else that comes with it. I mean, it's a big development in such a rural area.
Let's see. This is from Gil, our county commissioner, saying you do such a great job, Zach. Let's see. He just got back from Illinois. Trees there are amazing. I notice they provide so much extra shade and cooling effect that we don't appreciate as much as we should here. Thank you for emphasizing trees in your program to remove sod. Have a great day. Thank you, Gil. Appreciate that. We're down to the last minute. I was going to let's talk about it. Well, they've been talking about Warner Valley Reservoir, Warner Valley Lake for literally 100 years now.
Yep.
Every month you come on, I ask about it. I'm going to ask again, is it going to happen ever?
We're still in the environmental review process.
Okay. I hate that word. I hate that group of words. Environmental review process.
Yeah.
Because there might be some little fly that we might, All right, Zach. Well, great job as always. It's great to see you today. Yeah. I guess you're going to Moab too, huh? You and Carrie? And...
I unfortunately have to stick around for a funeral, but then I'll be driving to Moab, so.
It's mostly uphill from here to there. And it's not a fun drive. The drive back is more fun and mostly downhill.
Yes.
In fact, my truck, I got like 18 miles a gallon coming back, which in a big old truck, that's pretty good. So anyway, thanks for coming on today, Carrie. Thanks for your help. Appreciate you. More tomorrow. Mayor Humphreys from Enterprise will join me here on the show.